Let's talk to the cool scientist, Sean Duke. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Declan. Good morning.
Good morning to you from Science Spinning, the science stories of the week. One we've been mentioning on your list this week is racism in our DNA, a fear of others or a dislike of the other. Is it in our DNA?
Well, scientists think that it may well be. There's a story on this in theconversation.com. And what they're saying is that essentially we're hardwired to have a bit of xenophobia or racism or bigotry within all of us. And the reason for that is that it was very important in pre-modern times to, you know, fear others who could be a physical threat. They might steal our resources. They might even introduce new diseases that we're not adapted to. So when we lived in smaller groups, it was very important to have loyalty to the group and to fear others. And this meant that our brain essentially got hardwired to fear outsiders. And essentially, you know, as time has gone on, of course, we know now that we need to have a bigger view, a more global view. But it's still there. It's kind of, they call it the reptilian brain, that we need to overcome this tribalism. And the thinking is that in times of stress, like we're under now, where there are a lot of things going on in the world, that people have a tendency to go back into that tribal mode a lot easier. And we need to be aware of it, this fear that we have, and to try and stimulate the other parts of our brain, which is the kind of the frontal area of our brain, the prefrontal cortex, they call it, because there, that's the more recent part, which is all the good stuff, if you like, the rational thinking, the compassion, the way we link up with others and think of others, you know, those kind of instincts in us. But the scientists think that we really need to be at least aware that we have this in us. And that doesn't mean that because it's there that we have to give into it, of course, that there are ways to overcome it. You know, ways that you can do it is that you get involved with your community. It's harder now, of course, but that's certainly important, to be connected to others in whatever way you can. Meditation does this too. It stimulates the prefrontal cortex. And even computer games where kids, you know, during lockdown, my own kids, they were linked in with their friends and had the headsets on and they were talking. I mean, that in a way is good as well. So, you know, we need to try and rewire our brains, if you like, to be aware of this xenophobia, because there are politicians that we know that try and exploit this instinct in us. And especially when societies come under pressure, that they can tap into our tribalism very easily and set us against each other. And it's fascinating because it's actually to do with structural issues in our brain, the way we've evolved.
What other things do we suppress? Presumably, the greatest force that we have is reproduction, is to keep the species going. And basically, we don't act upon that out in greater society. We have our norms as regards finding a mate as such. So, you know, we repress things that are of primal importance to our, probably our logical or our brain of how it was formed in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Like sexism, I think you might be referring to there, where, you know, that of course things have changed again in the olden days, pre-modern times, if you like to call it that, that very masculine dominated societies where men just basically took what they wanted and that was it. And, you know, that there was a sense of superiority or entitlement when it came to partners, if you like, or the opposite sex in particular, sexism. Again, the same thing applies, that, you know, we now are more civilized, if you like, more aware. So we need to encourage the prefrontal areas of our brain, just because we have these instincts in us and that they're maybe hardwired into the older parts of our brain, doesn't mean that we can't overcome them. You know, the first thing is to be aware that they're there, not to deny it, but to accept that it's there, that it's in us, and to be aware of it, and then to do something about it by, you know, linking up with other people, being compassionate, thinking of others, treating people as you would yourself, all of those kind of things. And that actually helps to encourage the more positive aspects of our brain, our frontal brain, if you like.
Now, visitors into our home, we're not talking about human, but from time to time we hear, especially in the world, the, you know, food packages coming in from abroad and things, unwelcome visitors can arrive, things like that. But there's been an instance in the UK of giant house spiders coming into people's houses. Tell us about these.
Yeah, this caught my attention because my daughter's terrified of spiders, and I think it's happening in Ireland as well. That we have two species that are big spiders here in Ireland, like the UK. We've got the Daddy Longlegs, he's famous, everybody knows him, but we also have the giant house spider. We don't see as much of him, but I've seen a few of them around now, one or two of them in our house, and they're coming in, it seems. They're looking for a mate. It's getting colder outside, so they want to come into a nice, dry, warm place to hang out. You know, they're looking for a mate. They also come into the sheds and the garages. You'll see them there. Now, these are big. The legs can be up to 10 centimeters long, so that's pretty big. And they're different to the daddy long legs because they're more sturdy looking. The daddy long legs is, you know, he's got very skinny legs, but this chap has more sturdy legs, if you like. They can move pretty fast, and they could actually give you a little nip, a bite, but essentially they're harmless to humans. And like my daughter, she wanted it out of the house straight away, get rid of it. But actually, if you don't like having flies, lots of flies around, and they're still around, of course, at this time of year, then these guys are ideal because they really devour the flies at a rate of knots, and they keep them to a minimum inside the house. And in a way, the bigger they are, the better they are, because the bigger they are, the more flies and mites and insects that they've eaten. And, you know, they can, it's like having a guard dog there, if you like, to prevent all of these flies getting out of hand. And when they come in, then they mate, the female will lay her eggs, and then the poor old male spider will die, and you'll get lots more of them then.
Okay, right. The males seem to have a pretty bad deal in nature in a lot of species.
Yeah. With some spiders, like the female will mate with the male and then just devour, eat the male. You know, so certainly in the spiders, with some of the spiders, they get maybe a bit of a raw deal.
Yeah. Anyway, look out for those spiders. But if you want to get rid of the flies, you know, look after them as such and don't try to kill them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Now we come to some of the modern technology. Microscopic robots have been injected into brains to attack tumors. Tell us more.
Yeah, it sounds very far-fetched. And some people might remember there was a sci-fi classic, Fantastic Voyage, way back in the 60s. Where they injected a little submarine into the body and it travelled to the brain of this famous scientist that the government needed to keep alive. All very dramatic and all very kind of implausible, we thought. And he was going to die and they had to attack this tumour inside his head to save his life. So now, many years later, 50, 60 years later, this is actually becoming plausible. So science fiction is becoming a possibility because they're developing, or they have developed, these little machines, tiny machines. Now, they're about 5 microns. So to give you an idea, a strand of hair, that's about 150 microns wide. So these things are 5 microns, much, much smaller than a strand of hair. It's so small that they can travel inside the bloodstream. And essentially what they are is they're a computer chip that has little arms on it, like swimming arms. So once you put them inside the body, they can swim. And the amazing thing is that scientists have now developed this way using laser pulses where they can control them from the outside and get them to go where they want inside. So the idea with this, it's been reported in the Telegraph, these little machines have been developed in the US at Cornell University. And they're to try and help brain surgeons get access to the most difficult brain tumors, you know, which are really hard to operate. So if somebody's on the table, if you like, and the surgeon is very worried that they could damage the healthy tissue, it might work in a way where they would then inject thousands of these tiny little robots. They could then swim to where the tumor was, and then they kind of wrap around. They sense the chemicals being given off by the tumor, and that's how they move towards it. Then they find it, and then they kind of shrink wrap around it, which stops the tumor from growing and getting any worse. So quite amazing stuff. And this is nanomedicine, and people think that in future we're going to have these little robots going and checking out all kinds of organs in our body, not just the brain, but all kinds of organs to make sure they're healthy and to do something, release a drug or do something if there's a problem. So it's a real new frontier.
Indeed, right, all very welcome. But finally, let's end off with the cool scientist, Sean Duke from sciencespinning.com, our good old friend Elon Musk, anyway. What's his latest thoughts?
Yeah, Elon Musk, he's a real character, but you do have to take him seriously. I mean, he comes out with outrageous stuff, but he is the man, as we know, behind Tesla cars and SpaceX, so he's an amazingly successful entrepreneur scientist. So when he says something, you have to take it seriously. So now he's getting into this area of, well, the way he puts it is to give people superhuman powers. But essentially, it's work that's going on in a less high-profile way across the world. And essentially, what scientists are doing, including Elon Musk, is to use thought, human thought, to control computers or to control mobile phones. So in the first instance, this would be of great benefit to people who, for example, are paralyzed, they can't move. So they imagine the difference it would make if they could control the chair they're sitting in, the electric chair, or their phone or their computer just by thought. It'd make life an awful lot easier. And Elon Musk has set up a company called Neuralink, where he is looking to put a chip into the brain of people so that they can actually control computers or mobile phones by thought. He says that he's shown it works in a monkey, and last Friday he demonstrated it on a pig online, and he's saying that because it works in animals, that this could work in humans. And the long-term ambition is not just to help people with neurological conditions, you know, but to help all of us, to give us superhuman cognition so that we could all control our environment with our thoughts, because Elon Musk is terrified of artificial intelligence. He thinks that it's really something we have to really be afraid of. So he figures the best way to prevent artificial intelligent machines from destroying mankind is that if we become super clever, as clever, as, if you like, as the AI, and this is one way of doing it. He's calling it superhuman cognition, and it's certainly it's fascinating.
Right. I hope it's more successful than the windows in the car, anyway, that he was trialing. Okay. He smashed up that very well.
He did.
Anyway, he did. Sean, good to talk to you. Well done. Thanks very much indeed.
Thanks, Declan.